This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show. We appreciate you being on the Press Box. Having a good time with a lot of good conversation with my man Patrick Creighton as we continue to roll forward. So I do want to clarify something. Look, Carmelo Anthony's a Hall of Famer. All right?
Nobody said he wasn't.
Right. What I'm talking about when we got into the whole discussion of all of the older players and actually regurgitated ex-Lakers coming back, including Dwight Howard, amongst Dwight Howard and Kent Bazemore and Trevor Ariza and guys like that. Melo is not going to be what he once was. They hope Melo can be at least somewhat of what he was with Portland. But there were too many stops along the way where Melo stopped himself because he refused to come off the bench, because he had issues with coaches that he absolutely screwed over in New York. And because of the fact that my main comparison was the Lakers aren't the Nets. And that's not a good thing because both teams have their big three. But then it's, what are you going to do with the rest of your rotation? Rotationally, there is a lot of options to play a lot of different ways if you're the Nets. And you have youth with some veterans. You got a former All-Star with Blake Griffin. I think they have to replace Jeff Green. But I think that, and also through the guys they got in the draft, the Nets did it the right way. Because the Lakers are paying so many guys at the top of their roster a ton of money, it's all going to be veteran minimum. If Andre, the thing that also bothers me is, if Andre Drummond was willing to take the vet minimum to play for the Sixers, why wasn't he willing to come back for another year at the vet minimum for the Lakers when he said he enjoyed his time? That's one's puzzling to me too. But I think just from when you talk about Bruce Brown, when you talk about Patty Mills, when you talk about Blake Griffin, and then like I said, some of the youth that they also infuse into that Nets rotation, that's where the difference is made in comparing the two teams that are obviously loaded for bear and going to be the two favorites in the NBA.
The Drummond thing is really interesting because he took a minimum deal to go to Philly and play with Joel Embiid, and he and Joel Embiid hate each other. They talk massive junk to each other on the court. They talk massive junk to each other on Twitter. They're always sniping at each other, taking like really nasty shots at each other. I can't wait to see how that plays out. And why is he not back in L.A.? On a minimum, I got to believe that there's only two reasons. One, he wanted more minutes than they were going to give him with Dwight being back and Brow being healthy. Or the Lakers didn't want him because he can't shoot at all. He can still jump over the backboard, and he's still a terrific rebounder. But he can't shoot anything more than 5 feet out. He can't hit a foul shot. He's a limited player. The stuff with the Lakers, like, why is it not there? Maybe they didn't want him.
That's also a good point. I mean, it's a distinct possibility. Regardless, that's all there is to say about Melo. He won a title in college. He's done enough, no matter where he stopped when he was in his heyday with the Olympic teams and otherwise. Whether he wins a ring or not, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's in the statistical category where you cannot deny that. I'm just saying, when you look at a Lakers team that everybody is pointing to, including Kendrick Perkins, and saying they have the roster to win it all. I mean, you could say that about a lot of teams, but it's how you play on the court. And when you play with a LeBron, one of the things you sign up for when you say you're giving him the farm is you're giving him the farm, which means if there's guys he likes, then he's going to want you to bring them in. If you do, you're great. And if you don't, there's going to be issues. So I just like the fact that the way Marks and the Nets have constructed the rest of the roster around Harden, KD, and Kyrie is more conducive to winning and winning it all than the Lakers.
Now, I'm really interested to see how this works because you remember when Melo got traded to OKC, it was him, Russ, and PG. And they could never make it work. The offense was always, it was almost like, okay, Russ, it's your turn now. Then it's PG's turn. Then it's Melo's turn. They had no flow to that offense. It literally looked like it was, they just took turns on who was going to handle the basketball. It didn't work out. They got bounced out in the first round. Hi, how you doing, Rockets? Then he came here. It didn't work at all. He got the Melo flu. In Portland, his first year in Portland, you know, he was starting mainly because they were desperate for
bodies. They had a lot of injuries, yeah.
Last year, he didn't start, but he kind of played starter minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to start for the Lakers, and he's not going to play starter minutes for the Lakers. How is that going to work for Melo, a guy who's always had, you know, a lot of attitude issue? I mean, remember, in at the end of that season in OKC, I'm not sacrificing no bench role. I mean, he was really, like, for a guy who just got knocked out of the first round of the playoffs, he had a lot of things to say about coach didn't use me right, and I'm not taking a bench role, and then he was out of there. But how does that now work in L.A. where, you know, you're going to play with your buddy LeBron, but what are you going to play 10 minutes a night? Are you going to be cool with playing 10 minutes
a night? I was
going to
say, are you going to be okay with the 10 minutes a night?
If you are playing 10 minutes a night, let's say you have a couple of games where you shoot the ball well, are you then, hey, I need to play more, and then you play more and you play like, you know, you're shooting bricks all over the place, and then you go back down to 10 minutes a night, you're going to bitch? Because Carmelo's history says all of those things are going to happen.
Well, and the other thing is, too, especially from a Lakers fan perspective, Marcus Morris and Markieff Morris were guys that played key roles for the two L.A. teams. The fact that those two guys go away, Markieff was a big piece for the Lakers filling a role. He could play big, he could go to the block, he could shoot the three, and you trusted him when he was on the floor during crunch time. I think that Melo's going to want to get Melo. He wants to get his at all times. I've seen him come in ice cold off the bench, and the first thing he does in a key situation is yank a three when he hasn't even gotten a sweat going yet. And you're like, why? Well, that's because that's what Melo does. And that's in his mind, that's what he's going to continue to do until he steps away from the game again. And I think that that's where I'm at in terms of when you look at, I would favor the Nets over the Lakers right now simply for that factor of the role players. And the fact that the role players in Brooklyn, they know what their role is. They play it really well. Bruce Brown was an unbelievable draft pick for the Nets. And to get him on a steal for another one-year deal at like 4.7, he's a guy that does everything for them and does almost everything well. And the guys that they added were really, really cagey moves that just were guys that know how to play whatever role they're given. I don't think the Lakers have that. I don't think the Lakers look at these guys and go, well, there's my shooter. Well, there's my lockdown defender. Well, there's my backup when LeBron comes out of the game. Marcus Saul's on this roster, too, and he's damn hell-bent on getting that final year and those millions, the couple million dollars he's owed. Marcus Saul's a guy that unless you want a big shooting a three, he's not going to be the guy he once was to go get you the tough rebounds, set the big screens, and again, play large minutes. That's the other thing with these things that everybody's analyzing with rotations. Carmelo, because of age, isn't going to play more than 10 a game. Gasol's not going to play more than 10 a game. Whereas you got some thoroughbreds on the bench for the Nets, and that's going to be a big key.
And, you know, the Patty Mills move, and I know you talk about this, the Patty Mills move is great.
Yeah.
They really needed another ball handler. You can't, if Kyrie's not going to play, we already have seen firsthand how the offense moves if James Harden is the primary ball handler. And I don't think that works for Kevin Durant and the rest of the Nets. So you need to have somebody who can handle and distribute and take the ball out of Harden's hands and either get the ball to him or get the ball to KD in the spots where they want it so they don't have to handle the ball up and down the court, just in their spot to get their shot or make their play. So either that's, like I said, very underrated.
Another good point, because here's the thing. The other thing, the subtle things that go with these moves. Brooklyn's guys aren't looking to be big-time scorers. They're not looking to get theirs. They're going to do the job that they were brought in to do. Carmelo's going to still be looking to get his. And that's a problem.
I think when you're somebody who's been a top star, the end of your career where you're no longer a top star, I think is very hard for them.
It has to be.
And the idea of, all right, I'm not a superstar anymore. Maybe I'm not even a starting player. But I can go to the bench and I can play this role and I can be really, really good at this role and help this team win. That's a really hard jump for a guy who's so used to, it's on me, I'm going to put the team on my back, I'm going to get these clutch buckets, I'm going to pull it. And now you can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly we have seen Carmelo struggle with this very publicly. I'm really interested to see how he deals with being a 10-minute a night, go in there, you know, maybe you get 3-4 shots and then you're out. I'm really interested to see how well that works for him, because I feel like he was trying to, you know, there were nights where, you know, if CJ was off, you know, Nurk was hurt so much that Carmelo kind of wound up being the third guy for a lot of the season because, you know, Nurk misses so much time. And if CJ's not hitting his shot, somebody other than Dame has to score. So Carmelo would get extra shots.
Part of the reason why they had to go get Norman Powell, too.
This season, there's LeBron, there's Brow, there's Russ. Just right off, those guys are going to take 65% of the shots. There's not a lot of shots to go around after.
But unlike a year ago when there was Caruso and there was Caldwell Pope, and there were shooters, a Morris, guys that just sat on the perimeter and thought when they clogged the paint, when they double and triple those three guys, the open shots were being hit by those type players. The Lakers don't have those type players, because part of it is you still have to be athletic enough to find the open spot on the floor so that when the ball is kicked to you, you're open. Age factors into that too. Carmelo ain't exactly slide and move guy like he once was to find the open spot. He was a creator more than anything else.
And he's also bellyached in the past, specifically in Oklahoma City and here, that he's not a spot-up shooter.
Right.
He's not a stand here and wait for the ball and then shoot the three. That's not his game.
That's right.
And that's kind of what the Lakers need. Like, they needed P.J. Tucker more than they needed Carmelo Anthony.
Absolutely right. So there you have that. We covered up a lot of the signings from yesterday. Nothing really major, just a lot of small pieces moving to different places as we continue to move forward. Again, Astros and Dodgers tonight from Chavez Ravine in the final, the nightcap of the two-game set. So that's coming up with Odorizzi going up against Max Scherzer in his debut in Dodger blue. Lots of other things to get to. And a little NFL we haven't touched on. Of course, what's going on down on Kirby, where the man, the myth, and the legend for day two was not a part of practice at Texans camp, thankfully, as we had talked about. And Pat, we'll get your thoughts on that. So lots more to get to. You guys are a part of it. If you want to join in, 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. If you call in, even if you're telling us about your dog and you're a female, please don't cuss. We would appreciate it. And other than that, we got much more to get to. So keep it right where you got it. It's a Press Box on ESPN.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, here we go. As we get through the final hour of the show, some little more Astros news before we touch on anything Texan. According to Brian McTaggart and others, the Astros have reinstated right-handed pitcher Ryan Pressly from the paternity list, and they optioned, wait for it, oh my, thank you, Lord and Jesus, they have optioned right-handed pitcher Brian Abreu.
Be still, my heart.
To the taxi squad. So there's thank yous both directions. Is there a thank you from Sugarland, too, that they don't have to take him either? He can still travel and throw. He just can't do it in any kind of meaningful game for either the AAA affiliate or the big club. But, you know, Pat, let me remind you. He has electric stuff and a major league arm. I want to make sure, because we've never heard that before, Josh James, with anybody else, Anoli Paredes, that has any kind of ability to do anything for the Astros. But hey, he's not going to bother me anymore. There's one guy or two left that could still taxi on out of town. But for now, it's getting better by the day. And let me say again how much I liked the Gravedigger last night. The Grave Man was on fire last night. I loved it.
I know they don't throw the same repertoire, but tell me Josh James and Brian Abreu aren't the same guy.
I keep saying it. I've said it forever.
Right? Strike out the first guy, strike out the second guy, give him a walk, home run's coming. Like every single time they get the first two outs, and then for some reason they can't get the third out without giving up a run. It doesn't make any damn sense. Mm-mm. You know, with James and Abreu, both on the same issue, that they can't control certain pitches. You know, they've shortened Josh James' arm action, trying to help him get more command of his fastball. The pitch that a guy should have the most command over, his fastball.
Exactly.
So shortening the arm action has, you know, cost him a couple of miles per hour. You know, he's throwing like 94, 95, which is still throwing pretty hard. But, I mean, look, I'd be much happier if Josh James could throw 94, 95 and have
and know where it's going. Yeah.
Then, you know, he's throwing 98 and, you know, good luck trying to find where this puppy is going. Sometimes, I mean, look, Greg Maddux was the biggest purveyor of this. It's okay to sacrifice from miles per hour if I can paint it on the black anywhere I want.
No doubt.
He never had to throw as hard as
absolutely
he needed
right
to. Also on the Astros, Mark Berman, Fox 26, pointing out a little something from Elias. Yordan Alvarez surpassed the 150 RBI plateau, career RBI, with the two-run homer last night. He has reached 150 RBI faster than any active player in terms of games played. 180 games. Albert Pujols needed 188. Albert Pujols. He got to 150 faster than Albert Pujols.
Dude, he keeps putting up numbers and creating milestones, passing some of the legends of the game. I just want him to keep doing it because, again, like I said, at the start of this year, there were so many question marks, and he was a big one with his knees. And because of the great regular season and the not-so-great playoff and then the knees, people started wondering, after all was said and done, yeah, was he a flash in the pan, and was he great while they had him, but the bright light dimmed very quickly, or was he going to be a guy that you could count on and build around? Thank goodness, as we look at the season so far, he was one of the greatest answers to a question mark for this entire team this entire year. Right with Yuli, right with Jose Altuve, that was a big deal, and the fact that he's been a big deal has been part of the reason why they are sitting where they are today.
He's never going to be a great fielder.
No.
But, man, you can see the work he has put in left field. He is so much better than he was a year and a half
ago. But he's still so nonchalant. It doesn't, like, there's no fire under his ass at any time. Last night on one of the hits, that was kind of a blooper into left center, and you could see that the runner was thinking about going for two. He never changed his speed. He never gave you the look of, I've really got to bear down on this ball and fire it back into second. Just the same speed, the same even keel, just Yordan doing Yordan things.
He might be coached to that, too. They need his bat.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, go back to the Mets. 85, Darryl Strawberry, you know, back in the day when Darryl was a young player, he used to play all out. And he dove for a ball and tore up his thumb. And it cost him a couple of months of the season. He played through it, and he wasn't the same guy when he tried to play through it. After that year, you didn't see Darryl headlong, full speed. It was more about keeping his bat in the lineup. All right, if you can't get to it, you can't get to it. We'll live with a run here because we think your bat will get us that run later. For the Astros, I would probably coach it. Like, you don't need to go full layout, and that's not what we want you to do. You get to it, you get to it. Do your best. If you don't get to it, you come up, you get the run back for us. He's a guy that you really don't want to see playing the field. He's not a good
player. Don't. And you have to, based on the way baseball has done this with the designated hitter and the way the National League is. That's fine. But, again, and I even looked at it and said, why would you? I guess because of throwing situations, but Brantley doesn't have a big arm.
No.
But to put Brantley in right field, I'm like, I would have just left. It's like what we went through a year ago. I don't like taking two guys out of position. I would rather just take one, if possible. So, therefore, I would still leave Brantley in left, where he's most comfortable, and I would play Yordan in right. I know it's more of a gamble because there's more plays that require a throw in the field. But I don't. I just, you know, it's like multiple chairs all over the place. And the, by the way, the other guy that we talked nothing about pitch, nothing but pitching so far. But I'm done seeing Garcia at third base too.
Oh, he can't hit a leg. But as far as
the fact that he and Cody Bellinger are on a parallel universe with their average tells you, one, just how bad Bellinger's been this year, and just how much the Astros don't need to put him at third base anymore.
I'm not, I mean, look, I guess they did it because, you know, Yuli was a late scratch, so they moved Aledmys over to first base. But realistically, two guys I never, ever want to see on the field at the same time are Brantley and Yordan. I never want to see those two guys on the field at the same time. If Yordan is in left, then Brantley's going to DH. I am not going to risk Brantley, you know, getting hurt, foot, leg, whatever. Brantley's hitting 330. He's not hitting any home runs. He's only got six. But he's got 27 doubles. I'll take that. His OPS is still over 800. He's still, just because he's not hitting homers, doesn't mean he's not getting the job done from a power perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He's hitting freaking 330. That bat needs to be in the lineup. Plus, he's one of your few lefties. You know, Brantley and Yordan really balanced the lineup.
Just like you said, why the Yankees did what they did with Gallo and Rizzo was because that they were completely unbalanced and didn't have any lefties.
So I don't want to risk Brantley taking a bad step or, you know, something near the wall. Michael plays left. That's it. I don't want to see him in right. The same as I don't want to see Aledmys Diaz in right.
Yeah, I want Brantley right where he's most comfortable, which is where he plays all around the league, which is left field. Now, I will say this, and I want to ask you this first because, again, as a New York guy, are you a Mad Dog fan?
Not really.
I think you might be after this.
I was always more a Francesa guy than a Mad Dog guy.
Boy, Francesa, it's passed him by, and he is a crotchety old man.
He is a crotchety old man. Sometimes it's funny when he's a crotchety old man, but, you know, Mike in his heyday is the gold standard that every single one of us are judged by.
No doubt.
And that's what I grew up with.
All right, well, this is why you're going to like Mad Dog more.
Okay, let's see what
we got. It's a direct quote from Mad Dog on the Houston Astros. And I quote, "This is a championship caliber ball club, always has been, always will be. They know how to win. They are the epitome of courage. They got guts. Nothing fazes them. The Dodgers don't faze them. The Yankees don't faze them." I love every bit of that.
Well, it's nice that Chris is ready to speak the truth on the Astros now, because for the last 2 years, he hasn't been. He's taken shot after shot after shot at the Astros. I'm glad to see him coming around, and it's probably because Chris likes to be the antithesis of whatever popular sentiment is. But every word he just said is true. It probably killed him to say that, which makes me love it even more.
But he's been focused even more this year on basically saying, it's time to stop booing the Astros. It's time to stop worrying, even when they're not in town, about shouting things about Altuve and the Astros and worry about the fact that you're not a very good baseball team.
Well, that's the Yankee fan acting like a fool. They're playing, you know, some random team. They're playing some National League team, and they're still chanting bleep Altuve as if somehow, some way, that's going to make Altuve stop hitting or it's going to make the Yankees win games. The Yankees made a whole bunch of moves to do their best to try to make a run at the second wild card spot. Right now, the Yankees are in third place in the AL East. They're 6.5 behind the Rays. They still have to jump Boston and Oakland, and they're essentially on line with the Mariners for the second.
People keep sleeping on Seattle, and they're not going away. They gave away their closer, and they're still not going away. That's a hell of a story. All right, we'll get some NFL news here before we get out of here in the final half hour of the program. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. If you're in the West Katy, Fulshear, Richmond area, and you haven't been to the kitchen, you better get there quick. Because if you want authentic, really, really good Italian food, made from scratch, all the ingredients, in a family-style atmosphere, to where you feel comfortable, you leave full, and you love the fact that your wallet wasn't empty, that's why you go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. I've tasted basically everything on the menu. It used to be more that they were known for their pizza, and they still are, but they changed the name of the place because they want you to know there's so much more to choose from. Sure, it's still the best Italian pizza that you're going to find out in that area, but it's also lasagna. It's also beef stroganoff, and their wings are phenomenal. It's all the great meals made right there in the kitchen. The cheese is from Wisconsin. The Italian sausage is made in College Station. All their produce is fresh. And the owner, Chris Smith, is not just the owner. He's the guy in the kitchen whipping it all up for you so that it tastes just like you thought you got it from Italy. It's fantastic. Check them out today. You're going to be glad you did. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. If you're in that area, and especially if you live there, you got to go, because going once will mean you'll be back there again and again, because the Italian Kitchen serves West Katy, Fulshear, and Richmond, and lots of fans that come from all around to make sure they get the best Italian food. You can find them online, Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. But I'm telling you, you're going to be glad you stopped in, and you're going to love to taste all of their great entrees, including seafood food dishes. I'm a believer. You will be too. Chris Smith is the guy that got me hooked on it, and now I wouldn't go anywhere else for my Italian food. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
You heard the man. Me and PC taking you all the way till 4 o'clock, along with Tyler Scott, helping us stay along for the ride as we cover a whole lot of ground, a lot of Astros talk after a big win last night that everybody was loving. And again, they're at it again tonight. Texans, no news is good news, I guess, but the questions keep on coming because Deshaun Watson for the second straight day was not on the practice field for your hometown team down there on Kirby. Nothing's changed. Everybody giving you the runaround and the generic answers and all the other things. But like I said, look, this is the exact reason why he doesn't need to be on the field anymore for the Houston Texans, because this is about this year's version of the Houston Texans. This isn't about what happens in the future with Deshaun Watson. This isn't about what they're dealing with all that's happened in the past in the last 6 months to a year. This is all about what are you going to do, who are you putting on the field, and who's going to be out there when it matters when the season starts. That's what it's all about. So the fact that he was out there at all, I said from the get-go, was a huge mistake. The fact that he was risking injury, which he still may have, we don't know, because the other day he was on the training table pointing to his foot, is still an issue. Because you don't need even more issues when you already know he has 22 issues he's got to resolve before you can get in any kind of position to move him along to his next stop. And like we talked about yesterday when you weren't here, Pat, that we had a caller that called in that said they had a real issue with the fact that Houston should have more pride and feel better about themselves, to the point that no one should have been chanting, "We want Deshaun," yesterday. No one should have been begging him back like they were, of all the season ticket holders, to stay. And this is even before the 22 cases came up with the women. This was all about the fact that he said from the jump, "I don't want to be here anymore." And like I said, the same thing I said about James Harden. If you don't want to be here, then bye, bitch. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. I don't want anybody that doesn't want to be here being here, because it's like a relationship when you got to beg a chick to stay. She's staying for all the wrong reasons to be with you and stay with you, and it's not going to end the way you want it to anyway, so just move on.
How long did the Texans wait from Deshaun wants out to finally, yeah, you know what, we probably need to part? It didn't happen until after all these cases started getting filed. But they had 2 months where they knew Deshaun wasn't happy, didn't want to be there. They knew they were going to dog him. Hey, we're going to promise you that you're going to have input, and they didn't. We're going to try to bring the guys that you want, and they didn't. You know, if they didn't set the expectation that Deshaun was going to have a say and be kept in the loop, then he never has that, and they don't have any issues. That's on Cal McNair. Cal never should have made those representations to him. If you wanted to treat him like a regular player, okay, that's fine. Some teams do that. But don't tell him you're going to treat him like he's this like special megastar and you're going to let him have say over the team. And then you, no. Well, we were just kidding about that. Now you've created a problem you didn't have. And as soon as he said, I want out, and every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the NFL was on the phone, burn up your phone. Hey, what's it going to take for Deshaun? Just whatever it is, what's it going to take for him? Oh, we're not going to return their calls. We're going to pretend Deshaun didn't say this. They could have maxed out a deal for him right then when the iron was hot and 12 teams were begging for you to answer the phone. Nope, couldn't do that because we're the Texans and we're going to change his mind. We're going to make him see that we're the right relationship for him. We're the right team for him. And how has that worked out? Now we're in a situation where you can't move him, although Mike Florio claims that the Panthers are still
monitoring it.
And of the three teams that are always most often linked to Deshaun, Philly, Miami, and Carolina.
Denver?
Isn't Carolina the one with the worst quarterback situation?
If you don't believe in Sam Darnold, right? But they believe that they've got a young guy that's still, the jury's still out on, at least, as opposed to a Teddy Bridgewater where the jury's been deliberating forever and it's the same verdict every time.
Philly, Jalen Hurts, I think Jalen Hurts' star is brighter than Sam Darnold's right now.
Do you really?
I think Tua's star is brighter than both of them.
I would agree with that.
I think Sam Darnold is third on that list. And I don't think the Jets did anything to help him grow. I think they probably stunted his growth and sent him backwards.
How many offensive coordinators? How many coaches?
One every year.
How many bad offensive weapons to go to? How bad was the offensive line? So that's why I'm saying there's still a lot more high hope and potential for Sam Darnold than there could have been in retread Teddy Bridgewater yet again.
Oh, I understand that point a bit. If you know what Teddy is. And you know you're not going anywhere with Teddy, so let's take the flyer on Darnold and see what happens. I don't think that flyer is going to pan out. And of the team that's going to be most desperate to get the big quarterback, I think it might actually be Carolina. Of those three quarterbacks, Hurts and Tua and Darnold, I think Darnold is going to have the worst season.
Why would you not consider Denver in that mix? Denver's always been talked about in that mix. Kareem Jackson saying he wants to play with Denver, and with the no trade, that's important too. And Denver is the team that everybody looks at and says they're the closest to competing for a playoff and Super Bowl type run with everything but a quarterback. And Denver would be a guy, especially with how Elway has been just chasing his tail trying to find a quarterback over and over and over again with draft picks and otherwise. It seems like Denver, if they don't get Aaron Rodgers, they're going to go after Deshaun Watson.
I don't know that Denver has the pieces to make the move.
But it depends on what pieces you're going to need based on where they still are with this off the field stuff with him. And as a team that's rebuilding, at a certain point you just got to cut your losses going, it just can't hang over our heads anymore. It just can't. I know he's your biggest asset. So you've got to try and get all you can for him, but at a certain point is the hassle worth all of it, and especially when we don't know how long this is going to drag on. And like we said, if one goes wayward, it can blow the whole thing up anyway. That you just finally go, I'll take what I can get at a certain point when I know where everybody's drafting.
I think there is definitely a sentiment with Caserio and the Texans. They want to make sure they are not getting mocked on this deal the way that the team got mocked for the DeAndre Hopkins deal.
I agree.
They are very cognizant of, we have to at least break even, but really we have to win this deal. People have to think we won this deal. We have to get a boatload of picks and maybe a young player or two, but a boatload of picks. Denver doesn't have a boatload of picks. Philly will have at least two first-rounders. Miami can probably get you two first-rounders. Carolina's willing to give you multiple years of their whole damn draft. So I think they're more willing to pony up than Denver will be willing to pony up.
We shall see. Because, again, he has the no trade. That's going to factor in. The unknown is still going to be there.
I don't think the no trade is going to factor in. I really don't. If he was willing to go to the Jets, which is NFL wasteland.
But it's New York, and he's going to get all the pub and the endorsements and the extra cash.
But you're not really New York. Your kid brother, armpit New York. The Giants are New York. The Jets are the other team in New York. There is a big difference. It's bigger than Yankees Mets. The Jets are just the scrub team. They've got poor ownership. They never seem to get it right. And every time they do get it right, they somehow manage to deliberately screw it up. The Jets are awful. And if he was willing to go to the Jets just to get away from the Texans, every single team that somebody has thrown out there and said, well, this team might be interested, somehow the next day there's a report, oh, Deshaun's willing to go to that team. Deshaun has not been unwilling to go to any team that has been linked to him, even with like one byline of a sentence. I don't think the no trade is an issue with Deshaun.
Okay.
Well, I think there's too many other issues. Wants the hell out.
Fine. But the thing is that you can want all you want till you're blue in the face. But the fact that you have so many other things that got in the middle of all of this completely mucks it up to the point where no matter what you want and when you want it, and you're, I mean, the fact that they didn't do what you're saying they should have done the minute he said he wanted out, because I don't know that I can pull the plug on that. I don't know that I can say just because he said that, his issue wasn't with the coaching staff or the roster. And I'm sure he had roster issues because D-Hop was traded, because they got rid of some of the players like Will Fuller that he wanted to play with. But I think that the fact that he pointed it out and said it was Cal, and we know that that's it's in an unfixable situation. It's irreconcilable at that point because they're not selling the team and they haven't done anything that warrants the NFL taking the team from them. So, but at the same time, he's got to calm down because he has the contract, because he got what he wanted and realized that if he wants to play, he has to play here. So that's why I don't think that they did the wrong thing by hanging on to him, because no one could see this coming. But if you could, or you got wind of it and you didn't still try and that didn't start trying to work fast then because you knew that this train was coming and it was a big one, that's where I would fault them more.
No, but it's the idea, if somebody doesn't want to be here, how long do you sit on that? Mm-hmm. Well, we saw how long they sat on it, and then other issues cropped up. Now that those other issues have cropped up, they've basically put themselves in a position of, now we have to play the long game and see what the NFL does and how long he gets suspended and what happens. These other teams, and you know, Carolina, you know, the one today being brought up again, oh yeah, they're still watching Deshaun. These other teams are they're all saying, well, you know, we can't do anything until the league says, if the price comes down on Deshaun to whatever degree they find acceptable, they will look to pull the trigger. All right, right now the ask is what, a total of five top draft picks and or good young controllable players, right? What if that number suddenly gets down to two or three? If that number goes down to two, does a team like Carolina say, you know what?
You're going to have more engaged, conversations for sure. Because you're not looking at double digits and all the possibilities that could go wrong. But you still better be damn sure those three cases are close to being pushed to the wayside and resolved, as opposed to just like I keep saying, all it takes is one. And especially if that one isn't just civil, you got real issues on your hands. No matter what general manager is saying they're interested in trading for him.
The fact that, you know, there's 10 criminal complaints and zero charges, and zero times the cops have asked Deshaun to come in for questioning, and zero times they've gone to Rusty Harden, hey, we need to talk to your client about this. How strong are these complaints? Because this is going on since March now, and there's not really anything coming out of HPD.
Well, there were two more added last week that weren't part of the original 22, so we don't know that yet. We'll just have to find out. All right, what you got to find out is, Pat talked about it earlier in the show. If you got a vehicle that's not running anymore, that's a real pain in your side, and you don't know what to do with it, you don't want to spend even more money, invest even more by getting a tow truck to get it out of your possession, and then trying to figure out between where the title is it running or not, if it's a car, it's a boat, it's a motorcycle, it's a trailer, it doesn't matter. You can do something better, and it's not going to cost you a thing. You're actually going to get benefits because of it. It's donating it to Cars for Kids. Because if you donate the vehicle or the trailer or whatever you got to Cars for Kids, you're going to find out that they're going to pick it up for free. It's a tax write-off. If you don't have the title, it doesn't matter because they'll figure all of that stuff out. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. You get a $50 Visa gift card, and that's where the process really begins, because your donation is turned into resources so kids can get a second chance at getting their education. It also benefits the Houston Can Academies. It's all local. It's all kids and the Houston Can Academies that get the benefit of you donating the vehicle so that kids can make something of themselves, get that diploma, and move on with the rest of their life. Check them out today at carsforkids.org or call them at 713-225-4226. You're going to find out that it is a fantastic program, and it's because of donations from good people like you guys out there that make a difference in the lives of all of these kids. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal setup, and all it takes is you finding it in your heart to get rid of something you don't want so that it can make a difference for kids that are chasing their dreams. Check it out today. Do the right thing. We'd love to have you be a part of the program. And remember, mention ESPN 97.5 for that $50 Visa gift card right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, wrapping up the final segment of the program as we're having a good old time on a hump day Wednesday here on The Press Box. It's Patrick Creighton, my man PC. Myself and Tyler Scott, as we continue to talk all things sports and otherwise, and kick it with all the boxers. Got a little football talk in there. The other interesting football talk, guys, and I don't know how I feel about this, but I'd be interested in how the people in Indy feel about this. Old Philly, big Philly, Philip Rivers says after he's done coaching his team this year, guys, I might have to stay ready. If anybody needs me after I'm done coaching my high school football team, I'm ready to go. If you're Indy and you're leaning more towards 12 than 5, and he knows the playbook, are you thinking Philip Rivers might be your stopgap guy? Because they don't have one right now.
So here's the thing, and you know, I understand different states, different schedules and whatnot, but as somebody who's spent a lot of time covering high school football in Houston, the season doesn't end until November, and if you go to the playoffs, it doesn't end until December. Exactly when are you getting Philip Rivers in to get him up to be ready to play and then take over your team? Let's say his team doesn't go very far in the playoffs, and by Thanksgiving, Philip Rivers' season is over. Well, three quarters of the season's over. What good is it going to be? Oh, well, we're going to get Philip Rivers in for like the last three games of the season.
Let's not candy coat it. And this could go back to your Carmelo hate, and I kid you with that. But in our Carmelo discussion, Philip Rivers is another guy. It's Hall of Fame-ish. I believe he's going to the Hall of Fame at some point. But Philip Rivers showed us last year, especially down the stretch and in the playoffs, that he's not the Philip Rivers of old. That he's not the Philip Rivers of even his Chargers days when he was losing on bad field goal kickers, as opposed to not being able to get the job done. And at some point, we know Father Time is undefeated. I thought he made the right move, maybe even a little late, when he made it the decision to step away. The fact that he thinks he can come back and play, good on him for thinking that. I don't know that anybody in the league is going to hold their breath and think that he's the guy that could save their season.
Clearly, he don't have the fastball anymore.
No.
And he's never been a guy who's all that mobile. He's, you know, he's got that funky sidearm delivery when he's trying to throw the ball and he's on the run. He's trying to get out of trouble. I don't see Philip Rivers as a legitimate playoff quarterback anymore. And
how about just a NFL quarterback anymore? I mean, you can carry
he be a
clipboard. Yeah, yeah, backup. Right. I'm fine with that. But I just don't think that he's got anything left in the tank that says, from the beating that he's going to take, to the fact that he was never a speed guy anyway to elude the rush, to the fact that, like you said, his arm is petered out on him. It's a nice thought, but because of the name, but he's not doing anything that's going to excite any general manager in this league.
No, I don't get that. Other than, well, you know, I got 1,900 kids and I could certainly use another $1 million or $2. I don't see the appeal of Rivers wanting to go back or anybody wanting him other than on name value. Because I don't think if you're a playoff team and you lose your quarterback, you're not replacing with Philip Rivers and thinking that you're going to advance in the playoffs.
You're just not. So it's nice that he can say that, you know what, I'm out there. And I'm thinking about it. I don't think on the flip side anybody else is thinking like you are. That's just me.
And I don't think Ben Roethlisberger, as much talk as there's been, oh, well, he could come back again next year. I don't think he lasts the season this year.
By the way, Josh in Beaumont says that Sports Illustrated had an article that said Deshaun's lawsuits were underway before he demanded the trade. If that's true, and they didn't take it seriously enough to really get into it, and if possible even act on it, then that truly is on them. Because I was under the impression he had the trade demands, and then started getting wind of all of
that. The lawsuits didn't come until March.
That's right.
So he was already into the I want out. He didn't come out and yell it from the rafters, but there was plenty of reporting and you know, leaking through the grapevine. He wanted out, especially with the way they handled the coaching and the GM search. After, oh yeah, well we're going to let you, you know, you're going to have a say in this, and then you don't have a say in this. The basically token interview they gave Eric Bieniemy, which was clearly
forced.
Look, we're just going to do this to appease you.
After we screwed it up, we're going to try and save face.
Yeah, it was, the whole thing was a joke. And Deshaun at that point was already, you know, 2 feet, whole butt, shoulders, and bags out the door.
All right, since you mentioned butt, and JD's going to have a field day with that on Twitch. Before we get out of here, Troy wants to get in here. Troy, what is going on, my man?
Hey, how y'all doing?
What's up, man?
Hey. I've been listening to Joel since The Suspects, and this has been my favorite Joel with Patrick Creighton. Y'all are like for a serious show, y'all are like two opposing thought processes that come together. So y'all complement each other real well. And I know there's not no probably any plans to give y'all a show. If y'all two had a show, it would probably be my favorite show because y'all talk seriously about sports. But Joel talks about sports from a macro point where he just talks about objectively, if all things considered, this is what it should be. And Patrick says, hey, look, for this particular reason, these people should do this. And together, that makes magic. And until I heard y'all today, I never would have thought that. That's all I wanted to say. I like y'all's show. I like y'all working together. And if the forces that be led it, I would really enjoy y'all two having this show.
Thanks, Troy. Appreciate the call and the love. We appreciate you listening, my man. This is all due to Tyler Scott. This was a decision that he had been brewing and waiting to put into play for years. In the last few weeks, it's something that he said was the right time, and he could not wait any longer. And so all of the complimentary text, tweets, and messages should be directed to one Tyler Scott.
Troy, we appreciate you, man. I really appreciate you with the comments. Thank you very much. And I'm glad that you joined us, and I'm glad you're enjoying the show. And, of course, we do have to tip our hat to the man on the other side of the glass because he had the master plan that came up with it.
See? Way to go,
Tyler. As he yawns in excitement.
And gave a thumbs up. He was going to speak, and then he thought better of it. And there you go. All right, one more show in studio tomorrow, and then we're on the road to the 409 in Beaumont for 5 Under on Friday. But we certainly appreciate you guys listening. Coming up next, it's the HD show. As we told you, it's Freddie D and Henry T as they get you through your drive home all the way till 7 o'clock right here on ESPN.
You know I'm going to lose. I got plans for fools. But that's the way I like it, baby. I don't want to live.
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.